is Over the Garden Gate, a program brought to you by the University of California Cooperative Extension Master Gardener Program of Tuolumne County. The mission of the UCCE Master Gardeners is to provide research-based gardening information to the public. If you would like to contact our Master Gardener Program, please call our hotline, which is area code 209-533-5912. The hotline is not manned full-time, but we do pick up our messages and we will get back to you within the week.
Well, hello everybody. This is Debbie Powell. I'm the Master Gardener Coordinator for both Calaveras and Tuolumne Counties. We are recording for the radio show again, and I am going to be talking and chatting with one of our fairly new Master Gardeners, Tuolumne Master Gardeners, and that is Diane Miller. Hello, Diane.
Hi, Debbie. Nice to talk to you.
Nice to talk with you and chat with you. And the other day we had a lovely conversation about microgreens. And what started this conversation is you wrote a wonderful article that will be in the Union Democrat on microgreens. I have to ask you, how long have you been growing microgreens?
Oh, just recently, within the last few months.
So not a long period of time.
No, uh-uh.
But you've been a gardener for years, maybe not a master gardener for years because you just graduated, but how long have you been gardening?
For as long as I can remember. When I was a kid with my grandma, I was gardening.
Well, the reason I'm asking this, since you mentioned a very long time, I'm wondering if, since you only started growing microgreens the last couple of months, according to the article, you said that just about anybody could grow it. But finding out about your past gardening history, is that still true? Do you think anybody could grow microgreens?
I do. It was incredibly easy.
So what inspired you to do it?
You know, I was just browsing through the internet and I saw an ad for microgreens. And I now am just a container patio gardener. And so it seemed to me like a good idea and it looked easy. So I just read about it and started collecting what I thought the things were that I needed. And finally just said, okay, today's the day. And I followed the little notes that I had taken. And within a couple of days, I had these cute little seedlings popping up, and it was really gratifying.
Aww, cute little seedlings are fun. Can you maybe, for people that may not be familiar with the term microgreens, what does that really mean?
Well, the microgreens really are seedlings that are like they're a few days older than like sprouts. And it's after the cotyledon leaves or the first set of true leaves appear. And you can really use any container. I chose just a plexiglass tray that's about 2 inches deep. And I mixed, just moistened some soil and put it in it, and I sprinkled radish seeds all across the top of it, and then I put paper towels down on top of it and just sprayed it with a spray bottle. And the plexiglass was so nice because I could see the little roots emerge, and I had it sitting on my kitchen windowsill, so it was real easy to, you know, I saw it every day, I sprayed it every day, and within like 2 or 3 days, I took the paper towels off, and there was like this blanket of little radish seeds, and I let them grow to be about, 3-4 inches tall. I bought new scissors so I could clip them, because you just cut the tops off of them, and I had them in salads, and I had them in sandwiches, and they were delicious, and it was so easy. I didn't really have to do anything except keep them moist.
Diane, that sounds great, but let me go back to soil. What is it important to have a certain type of soil? Or maybe I should just ask you, what soil did you use?
I had some, the coconut, I don't know how you say it, C-O-I-R.
Right.
And Coir. I had that because that was easy to get and easy to use. And then the second time I used just some Miracle-Gro potting soil.
So just normal potting soil.
Yeah.
It wasn't even special soil for seedlings. Mm-hmm. It was just normal potting soil.
Just regular, plain old potting soil.
That you would use maybe for any type of container plant.
Yeah. Yeah. And just about an inch deep. And that was, you know, I just moistened it in the plexiglass container. I have read where people can just, you know, the styrofoam fast food containers, pretty much anything that'll hold soil, you can grow microgreens.
Well, now going back to the soil, though, we have the type of soil, so it's not very picky. But you just said that you only needed about an inch of soil?
Yeah. The plexiglass was about 2 inches deep, and I put an inch of soil in the plexiglass, and then I used the radish seeds, and I just covered the whole top of the soil like they were right next to each other, and kind of just tapped it down with my fingers, and then I put a paper towel on top, folded, because I thought that would help me know if it was staying moist.
Well, that's a good idea. If you had sprayed the soil too hard, like with a squirt bottle with a mister or something like that, that might have kind of moved the seeds around.
Yeah, it could have. And I just, you know, I didn't want to be touching it all the time to tell if it was wet. So I could see when the paper towel was moist, and I misted it like twice a day, morning and night. And like I said, it was like a day or two, and I could see the roots coming down through the plexiglass. Oh, it was so exciting, because then I thought, oh, they're all, and then another day or two after that, the little seedlings were popping up. And it was like just a whole carpet of seedlings.
How fun. That is really fun. Now, where in your house did you put this plexiglass tray? You probably didn't put it on a south-facing window. I mean, I've got a south-facing window, and that's a hot, hot window.
Well, mine is shaded by the garage, and so it's a south, and well, kind of more east, actually, facing window. And it's about 75 degrees in the kitchen all the time. And I pick the kitchen window because I go in the kitchen to wash the dishes every day. And so there was access to water. And I had my little spray bottle right next to it. And I just sprayed it every morning and every night. And I was amazed at how easy it was. The things I've read, they say I like spicy, so that's why I picked radishes. But they also say arugula, mustard seed, things like that are like a spicy.
So you could add them
too,
to your salads, right? You could add it.
On salads. I put it on sandwiches. I don't, living alone, I don't go through like a head of lettuce fast enough. And so it was like, gave me a crunch on every single meal.
How fun. Now you mentioned you've got some websites that you, when you were doing your research on it, was one of the websites, Johnny, what was it, Johnny Seeds? Was that it?
You know, I did go to that website because you had mentioned something about that. And on the Victory Garden thing, I had seen somebody had mentioned that. And so I went on Johnny's Seeds, and they actually have, like, they'll sell seeds in, you know, a packet, a 1 ounce container. So you can buy it in different volumes. And that makes it, because you're not spreading it like along a furrow. You want to cover your whole surface of whatever container you have. And they have it, they have a microgreen picks, you know, all these different herbs, because like maybe you like dill. So you could plant dill and you could clip all this little dill and you'd have a dill flavor in everything.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. So, and that brings up another point. When you do have these trays and you're putting the seeds on the soil, is it, so it's not like one seed and then an half an inch or an inch and then another seed, and then you're kind of, how do you put that on the soil? What's the easiest way to do it?
I just sprinkled it so it was blanketed with soils. I mean, the soil was blanketed with seeds.
With seed. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. That's a good idea.
And the radishes are like the little round seeds, so it was real easy to see them. Now, I haven't done, you know, like carrots have really small little seeds, so I haven't tried that yet. But I could see the radish seeds, and so I used a lot of seeds, and that's why I bought the bigger volume of seeds to be able to, you know, spread it across the whole container.
Right. Now, have you started multiple containers?
I started a second container just when I was getting down. Oh, I guess it was about, I thought, 2 or 3 days before my first container was going to be empty. And because I just clipped as I went, the second container, I got about halfway through and they were getting longer. And so I thought, well, I better cut. So I cut all of them and I put them in a salad spinner and washed them and then put them in a Tupperware in the refrigerator and then just used them from the refrigerator. And then the leftover, now I hear that you can just try to keep growing them again. I haven't tried that. I took it's like a little blanket then with all the roots, and I gave that to my daughter's chickens, and they had a treat. They got to eat all the little sprouted seeds.
Plants.
The
wow.
Roots.
Great idea.
So, and I would imagine you could put it in a compost pile, would be perfectly fine. And there are some companies too that I found reading around that I haven't tried it, but they have what they call seed blankets. And it looks like a little pillow of maybe some type of like paper towel cardboard, and there's seeds inside of it. And you just set that in your container and moisten it, and then you peel the top off. So it's, you don't have, like, it's whatever they have the seeds setting in. So it just makes it even easier.
Right. That's a great idea. I've got another question for you. And so now that you've had some of these experiences, and they all sound great, by the way. I mean, I'm going to have to try it. The radish sounds perfect. Are you going to branch out? Are you going to try new seeds?
I have bought new seeds, and I was going to try different kinds. I was going to try mixing several different kinds together. And I was going to try some more. I was going to try to go into the spices that I like, because I thought, wouldn't it be nice to have basil and have a whole bunch of little, you know, basil seedlings and put that on like a salad. Supposedly you can do like broccoli and cabbage and wheatgrass. I got sugar snap peas that I'm going to try.
But you're starting to make me hungry. Endless. They all sound good.
Yeah.
They do. And I love your idea regarding mixing them. And now, if you're thinking about mixing them in one tray, it will be kind of interesting to see if you pick seeds that all have the same germination rate, meaning they all start to emerge at the same time, or if...
Yeah, that's another thing that you'll have to see. And they're also really colorful. You know, like if you get little beet ones, there you have all these little purple ones. And so it not only adds flavor, but it adds, you know, it's visually appealing.
Oh, that would be fun. That would be fun. That would be fun to add a row of purple and then maybe a row of green and another mm-hmm. row of purple. That would just be fun. Mm-hmm. Oh, gosh, that really is. Now, is there, let's see, there was something in your article I thought was really interesting. I know you mentioned about salads, but you also mentioned that you can add them to smoothies.
Yeah, I don't have smoothies, but everybody puts, spinach and this and that. It's like having your own little mini garden right in your kitchen all of the time. And it goes so fast. And if it doesn't turn out to be something that you like, you really haven't invested a lot of time or money. You just go, well, okay, I'll try a different seed next time.
Good ideas. And I love hearing about it. Diane, I hate to tell you, but we did run out of time. We'll have to have you come back, but I want to thank you for this fascinating conversation. So goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Hello, everybody. This is Debbie Powell, I'm Master Gardener Coordinator for Calaveras and Tuolumne. And Linda Reevely, our Tuolumne Master Gardener, is here at the UCCE office with me. Hello, Linda.
Hi, Debbie. How are you today?
Great.
Good.
And we are doing you're the one doing it, a book review on another fabulous book. What is it?
Well, this is a book that I'm real fond of. It's called Attractive Native Pollinators, Protecting North America's Bees and Butterflies. This is the Xerces Society Guide to Native Pollinators. And it's a very comprehensive book with beautiful photographs and a lot of information. As they say about food, it be nutrient rich. This book is intellectually nutrient rich.
Oh my gosh, I love that.
It's a beautiful book. And it's 370 pages of information about bees and butterflies and other native pollinators and what can be done to save them and what can be done to encourage them to play a better part in our environment.
You know what, Linda? I'm going to be the devil's advocate here. Do we really need to be concerned about this?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, should we just be a little concerned is this something really to...
We need to back up here. We need to be majorly concerned.
Okay.
The absolute health of our planet depends on maintaining these ecological structures that one of the biggest players in the whole structure are pollinating insects. Every plant that produces seed needs to be pollinated in some way. Plants like grapes are actually self-pollinated before the grape even emerges. Wheat is pollinated by the wind, as is corn. But most other plants require a pollination experience, essentially, where pollen from one flower is taken to the next flower, fertilizes that flower. The flower can at that point grow seed. Seed ends up on the ground somewhere, sprouts, becomes new plants. It's the absolute cycle of that side of plant life.
And
ferns don't do that. A few other plants don't do that. But the vast majority of food things we eat have to be pollinated. Fully about 75% of the plants we eat for food require pollination.
But a lot of times, I think it's kind of difficult to understand the importance of it because
we actually don't even really look at bugs. I mean, I mean, we look at birds, we look at mammals, we look at the animals around us, we look at plants, but the last thing in the world we really, or I'm just speaking in general terms,
right,
is really to pay attention to the bugs in our life.
To insects.
Sometimes a lot of us have grown up with the philosophy that bugs are bad. And if you have a bug in your house, you should kill it.
Yes, or a bug outside, you should kill it.
Right.
The only good bug is a dead bug. The real problem with that is that we don't really understand the enormous complexity of the lives of insects.
That's true.
And how they operate in nature.
That's true.
And your house, whether we, well, some of us a little more than others, is certainly a part of nature.
That's true.
And those insects, you know, there are insects that live in your house innocuously, and there's insects that cause damage to your house. We're taught that insects, we're all taught as children, like flies, are dangerous vectors of disease. I'm old enough to remember the polio epidemic, and flies were a primary vector of polio.
Oh.
And so I grew up being absolutely terrified that a fly might land on anything I was ever going to eat.
Which interesting
is something to consider,
right?
But that doesn't mean that fly doesn't play an important part in the cycle of life.
Okay.
And that it doesn't have its own place to be and its own, you know, reason for being.
Right.
These things are all incredibly intertwined. And I didn't really become interested in insects myself until I decided to keep bees. And
okay.
Bees are one of a few kinds of highly social insects that people have been involved with for many, many years, since probably, pre-Stone Age.
Wow.
People were probably collecting honey from beehives, and certainly other animals do it as mm-hmm. well. And so bees are kind of a gateway insect for an interest in insects, a lifelong interest in insects. But pollinators are a much wider group of insects and other animals.
Okay.
And this book is really an interesting book. The first chapter, which you just covered nicely, is Why Care About Pollinators?
Oh.
And because they're important. It's right. An important part of what keeps us okay. all alive. It talks about how pollination works and who these pollinators are. There's bees, there's native bees. You know, there's over 1,600 different kinds of native bees in California alone.
Oh, I had no idea. Absolutely none. That's interesting.
Wasps, flies, butterflies, and moths, beetles, all of them are important pollinators. Even ants are important pollinators for some plants.
Oh, my goodness.
And so we really need to think about that when we spray poison around our house.
Right.
Or go to the store to buy something to kill aphids and end up with the most powerful kind of insecticides available today, which are the neonicotinoids, and go home and decide to spray that all over everything.
Oh, goodness.
You can knock off entire communities of insects with one foolish action.
And it's so easy to do.
It's terribly easy to do. They're tiny little creatures, and they're very susceptible to some
yeah.
things. Now, other threats, habitat loss.
Okay.
We systematically have destroyed habitat for insects. In the Sierra alone, where we find cattle or sheep grazing, if they overgraze a certain area, it tramples the bumblebee habitat so badly that the bumblebees completely disappear from the area.
Oh my gosh. I had no idea.
I know, it's an amazing thing we don't think of. There are other things that are probably hard on them. Of course, the widespread spraying of insecticides. And obviously, if Zika virus is bearing down on you and your family, you want us to spray for mosquitoes.
Right.
But we really need to take care and to know that that needs to be an occasional occurrence, not a daily kind of application of insecticides.
Right. Not a way of life.
Not a way of life.
Okay.
Because you destroy far, far more than just mosquitoes when you
right.
spray. Now, this book also has a real interesting section on taking action. Things that you yourself can do. How to get interested in, say you play golf.
Mm-hmm.
There's a whole section in here on helping to create new habitats, bee-friendly parks, and golf course management that you could introduce your golf your golf course landscape folks to to help them do a better job. If you are interested in school campuses or making an eco roof or highway and railroad right-of-ways, this book gives you some handy information about how to get involved in helping to restore habitat for native pollinators in those areas.
That is fabulous.
Pretty
that really
good,
is. Huh? Absolutely.
I think it's pretty good. After that, we also have a whole section on the bees of North America. It is a truly encyclopedic, I hope I said that right. I grew up with teachers from Texas, and whenever I say that word, I sound like I'm from Texas. A long story that one, but nonetheless, it really helps us to understand what the varieties are, how they work, what their place in our environment is, and how you yourself can encourage and take care of some of these insect species that aren't honeybees, which requires a fair amount of equipment and some training and expertise. But for instance, mason bees will live in those funny little bee houses with the bamboo rods.
Oh yeah,
those are perfect. If you just leave a few spaces of natural dirt in your garden, particularly strangely enough, mouse holes, bumblebees will move in and live there.
Really?
And bumblebees are just amazing. They're so beautiful and charming.
So if you've got just leave some bare dirt.
Some bare dirt you don't walk over all the time and disturb.
Okay, and that's it.
That's it. It's all it requires. Because they dig these little tunnels and they lay their eggs in the tunnels.
Oh, fascinating.
Yeah, they're amazing. The book also has how to create a pollinator-friendly landscape with some sample gardens.
Kind
of like recipes for your garden.
Right.
And some recommended pollinator and butterfly host plants. Don't forget the butterflies. We all love them.
Oh, we do.
And yet the populations of butterflies have plummeted.
That's true.
You know, there are places in Europe where there are practically no insects.
That is astounding.
I know.
That's astounding. I can't imagine it.
Fortunately, we live in a place where the insect population is still fairly healthy. But there are places, even in the United States, where you can open your windows, have no screens, and never see a bug in your house.
That's amazing.
Because they've all been killed.
Oh my gosh, now that we know the advantage to having the insect population, that is really a scary thought.
It's a shock. And it's really scary thought. There's whole sections of Germany that are completely free of insects now.
Oh my gosh. So how do they pollinate?
They bring bees in.
Oh, so then you're dependent upon a beekeeper actually shipping in the bees to the area.
Human beings having to get in there and move the bees around.
You can't rely on the natural system taking care of itself.
And we all of us who live here in California are aware of the almonds.
Yes.
And the bringing of the bees to the almonds.
Yes, we sure are.
Do you know that those bees represent the largest insect migration in the world?
To pollinate almonds?
And they come on the backs of semi-trucks.
Isn't that incredible? That's incredible.
More insects come to pollinate those almonds than move around by themselves anywhere in the world.
Oh my God.
That includes locusts.
That is staggering. That is a staggering statistic.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
It is.
Absolutely stunning.
Oh my gosh.
So this also has ideas for educators and parents, a great glossary, and a big list of information and resources that could be helpful if you're interested in this. Again, this book is called Attracting Native Pollinators, Protecting North America's Bees and Butterflies, and it's published by the Xerces, X-E-R-C-E-S, Society.
Sounds like a wonderful book, Linda.
It's a good one.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye. You've been listening to Over the Garden Gate, a program presented by the UCCE Master Gardeners of Tuolumne County. I'm Linda Reevely. Thank you for being with us. Thank you.